Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. We have on with us today Marion Jacobs, psychosocial therapist and author of a newly released book, Suspended Values in Concentration Camp and Prison. She is back to speak on the penal system, the need for prison reform in the United States, and more on her book. What I'd like to talk about today, before we get started, was yesterday we had a scheduled show. We had many problems on the show, and as many other advocates, we are looking at some events coming up in June and July. Ignite Justice was on yesterday, and they are working on a rally for prison reform and some of the issues, including terrorism in the prisons. Emily Shelton was on with Christopher Willis. Unfortunately, the show did not go as planned because of enormous interference in the radio show with sound. Because of this, I had mentioned the government is going to try to keep us, prevent us from getting the truth out. Emily apparently dropped by no fault of her own, I'm sure, at this point in time. However, her assistant, her partner, was offended by my statement that I had made that Emily dropped because she may have been afraid of the government. I wanted to bring this up because sometimes as advocates in this country, we sometimes get under much stress with all the things that are going on. And as many of you know who are in the advocacy field, that the government does get involved in trying to prevent the truth from getting out. We also know when incarcerated people come out of prison, when they have been incarcerated for so long, they come out thinking the world is against them, many understandably. However, advocates are not out to harm those incarcerated, regular, current incarceration, or former incarceration. We are out to advocate, to fight for justice, and to help the incarcerated. And unfortunately, many of them do not have that blessing or opportunity to come out as some. Advocates need to know that when prisoners come out, they do have this fear, they have this anger, they have this frustration that the world is against them. And I'd like to bring this up now because we would like to have Marion Jacobs, the psychosocial therapist, speak a little bit about that as well. So I want to introduce to the audience, again, our guest who has been on the show before, Marion Jacobs, psychosocial therapist and author of Suspended Values in Concentration Camp and Prisons. Marion has been in prisons in the United States. She's been an advocate for the incarcerated in the United States as well as doing volunteer work in the prison in the Netherlands. Marion has been well known to all of us, and you can find her on the internet as well. She is also the founder of the Facebook page, Deeper Justice, and she will talk a little bit about that as well. So, Marion, are you on with us?
Yes, Leona, here I am. Thank you for inviting me again.
I want to thank you so much for being on with us. As I was mentioning, Marion, I did have a show scheduled for yesterday, which I had to cancel the whole thing. And I had a couple of advocates on whom were unable to really go through the show completely. And one of them dropped, and I made a statement as to being afraid of the government. And I stated that no advocate should be afraid of the government. And we all know that when we're trying to get the truth out, we do experience oppression. So if you can speak a little bit on that. And I also want to let families of the incarcerated once again know that while advocates are out here fighting for their own and also for your loved ones, you need to get more involved. We have people right now all over social media talking about the injustices. crying about their loved ones being incarcerated and being harmed, yet sitting back and letting advocates other than themselves do the work. We are encouraging them to please join us in our fight for justice for the incarcerated population in the United States. Thank you so much. Marian, please do start. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, that's okay. I wasn't there, of course, yesterday, but I think, being an advocate, it is difficult because, oppression is to be expected because there are some parties who benefit from incarceration. We talked about that before, that there is this million-dollar industry. There are some parties who really would like to keep the things as they are. And those will oppress every attempt to make a change. So yes, that might be sometimes difficult for advocates. And I think what gives you as an advocate power or strength is when you know exactly why you are advocating, what is happening in the prisons, and what your motivation is to do that. And if your, if the motivation is very sincere and it's very pure, that gives a lot of strength to go against all the oppression that there is. That's what comes up in me when I hear your story. And what we were discussing before the show started is when people have been incarcerated for many years and they get out, they get released, they are very harmed. So their trust is gone. And they do not only feel as if the world has been against them for all these years, but the world has been against them for all these years. And they have experienced it on a daily basis in prison, because that's what the system does. That's part of the dehumanization of the incarcerated individual. So when somebody after decades of incarceration, or maybe 10 years or even still shorter, it does a lot of harm. So that person, when he comes out, he has to learn to trust again, and that takes a long time and a long time of healing. And some of them will never fully trust again. And I can understand that.
You know, I when I think about it, I can understand how they would feel and how they would be offended. But again, I feel like all advocates should understand this type of situation, because they have to know that these people are coming out already cautious, and they should be able to explain to them when something is said, when a remark is made or whatever, that it's not as serious as they may consider it to be.
No, and maybe what helps is when it's possible to start a conversation with that person. We can learn the most from people who have been incarcerated. You know, Leona, you have never been incarcerated. I have never been incarcerated. So I do know a lot in theory. I wrote a book about it, but in practice, I don't know what it means to be incarcerated. So there is a part of it that's a mystery to me. And the only ones who can teach me a little bit more about it are the people who have been through incarceration. So when somebody gets released and he would not trust me, I would not feel offended, but I would try to start a conversation and ask him how he experiences the distrust, what trust means. You know, it's a little bit of what I always say about deeper justice. I try to understand that person who has this experience of incarceration in such devastating circumstances, because that's what we're talking about when we talk about incarceration in the United States. We don't know what it means, so we can learn from them. They have to explain to us. We cannot know. They have the knowledge about it because they know what it means.
Exactly. So now, Marian, one of the things is I have a thing with families again. The parents, the boyfriends, the girlfriends, the wives, the husband, all these individuals who have loved ones inside who know that we're struggling and we're fighting for justice, we're trying to get things changed, trying to bring justice and reform into the penal system. who are sitting back and doing nothing. And sometimes when these things are brought up on the radio show, people such as the ones that I had yesterday, the advocates I had yesterday, they will automatically assume that the discussion is about them. And there used to be a saying, if the shoe fits, you know, so be it. But that's not the case in this situation. But it's something that needs to be brought out. We need to challenge these family members of loved ones inside who complain but do not get involved. It does not necessarily mean that every time it's discussed on the radio show, it refers to advocates or it refers to certain or specific family members who do get involved. So I just wanted to get that out. And now, Mariam, I'd like to have you speak more on your book, Suspended Values in Concentration Camp in Prisons, and again, the comparison between prisons in other countries compared to mass incarceration in the U.S. So if you can talk some on that too.
Yes, I wrote this book, and I did research to the underlying structures of mass incarceration. I try to look further than the well-known facts on the surface. And I came to this research because 25 years ago, I visited a concentration camp, Auschwitz. And it was a year before the pandemic broke out that I visited the prison system in Florida. And when I came into the system in Florida, I intuitively felt a comparison, I felt similar elements in the Florida prison system as I did in Auschwitz, and it made me curious about is it right what my intuition is telling me, and that's why I started to do this research. So I dived into the underlying structures of Auschwitz, and I did the same with the American prison system, and I came to the conclusion that there are elements which are exactly the same. So I also came to the conclusion that in a way, Auschwitz never ended. We still are dehumanizing people, and we're still taking away, or as I say, we are still suspending human values by locking up people and benefit from it. So on the surface, both the system are completely different, but the structures are the same. And I wrote this book because I hope that people become more aware of what we're doing to each other and that there are alternatives, humane alternatives. That's why I wrote the book, because it was very shocking to discover that these structures are still in the West, are still present in the West. And and in my, what I did in my book is that I try to understand what we mean when we talk about norms, rules, you know, in society, and how they are suspended. I always, also in my book, I also describe that mass incarceration is a choice. So that means that you can also make another choice. It's not something that just, you know, fall from the sky or something that happened to us. It has been a political choice, and it is still a choice. And that means to me that when it is a choice, that there is a responsibility involved. We can also take responsibility to make another choice. And that's what you are trying to do with fighting for prison reform. And I also described in the book the similarities between the violence that occurred in the prison system, and there is an overlap with the violence that occurred in the concentration camps in World War II. So there are, and I also have a chapter written about the incarcerated life, both of the camp prisoner and the prisoner in the United States prison system, and they really also show similarities, which means that, you know, we are still having some kind of concentration camps. And I know this is a very huge thing to say, because as I said, the concentration camps in World War II are completely different from the prison system, and also in the concentration camps were people incarcerated who were innocent. It had nothing to do with crimes. So that's also a difference. But I was really looking at underlying structures, and I believe that whatever somebody has done, you always can remain humane to other human beings, whatever they have done, because I believe that as a society, you should not retaliate or maintain, how do you say that, punishment as punishment, but you should be an example for people who committed crimes. So, you know, a community should be the humane example and show how prisoners can heal and restore their own pain.
That's a serious problem too. It's a serious problem when they get to feel that way and be that way. But again, the system, that's what it's designed to be like. Can you talk a little bit about the system, the prisons in your country? You mentioned before how the prisoners are treated like human beings. They're not called by numbers, but by names.
Yeah, there are a lot of differences. And I think the most important difference is indeed what you say, Leona. We see human beings in the prison. So we don't dehumanize the people in prison. And because we don't dehumanize them, we will not put them in solitary confinement for such a long time as as occurs in the United States. Our sentences are much shorter, because we say the longer somebody is incarcerated, the more difficult it becomes for that person to integrate in society again, because he has been away from the domestic life for so long. So the shorter the sentences, the less harm there is done, and the easier it is to integrate somebody in community again. So that's a very important difference. Solitary confinement does exist in the Netherlands, but only for the longest time is 15 days, because it has been scientifically proven that solitary confinement longer than 15 days becomes harming for the brain, and you get behavioral problems, and some of these problems will never change again. So it's really deep damage in the brain. So we are not allowed by rule, by the law, we are not allowed to give somebody solitary confinement longer than 15 days. So that's a very huge difference. There's also more privacy. Somebody has his cell, but he also has his own toilet and shower, so he can use that for himself. So there's this privacy. People can make food in their own cells. So they cook for themselves. There are programs, but that's also what you have. But we also have, our prisoners also have access to programs. We know that in the United States, when you look at websites of correctional institutions, they show a lot of beautiful programs, but many times I hear that it's very difficult for prisoners to have access to those programs. So what I think, we also do have life sentences. But when somebody in the Netherlands get a life sentence, it's not because of punishment, but that person shows that he maintains a danger for society. And that's another intention. In your country, you have life or life without parole, really as a punishment, an ongoing punishment. And that's a difference with the Netherlands. And we have a very good system concerning forensic psychiatry. So if somebody in the Netherlands commits a crime influenced by his own trauma or a psychiatric disorder, he will get a prison sentence, but again, that is as short as possible, and he will get treatment in a forensic psychiatric hospital. And these treatments can be short, but they can also take years, because somebody is going to the hospital for as long as it needs. He needs to fully recover and be safe again to return to society. So, yes, these are some very big differences between the Netherlands and the United States.
I've heard that from other, and again, Norway is the role model for the world. We have someone that will be coming on the show at some point in time with us, whether today or next week, Van, and she is from the Netherlands, and she speaks about the prisons in other countries as well. So I'm hoping to have her come on the show sometime. I told her about you, and she's interested in coming on sometime when you're on the show. So according to her work schedule, we'll see what happens with that. But she's been very active as well in the upcoming events. She's been doing the research along with myself and a couple of others. She's been doing the research to get the contact information for the governors and the media. And so she's been a big help. And as I say all the time, it seems like people from other countries, sometimes are doing more for the incarcerated in this country than those that are in this country. Family members need to get involved. And this is a major issue, because so many people in prison are in prison because they didn't have that family support to begin with. And you would think now these very same family members who complain about everything that's going on, they're not doing anything to participate in trying to bring about positive changes in the penal system in the United States. We have mass incarceration, and it's very important that we do something with this, against it, as a matter of fact. But anyway, Miriam, whatever more you can talk about. Dorothy D'Agostino just came on the show. I don't know, Dorothy, if you have any questions you want to ask or anything you want to say.
May I ask you, Leona, she's also Dutch, this woman you talked about?
I don't know. I believe she's Dutch. Her last name is Godboy, G-O-D-B-O, I believe it is.
But does she live in the United States?
Yes, she does.
As a matter of fact,
she is. She just left California a few days ago, and she was on her way back to Texas. I guess she also has a loved one in incarcerated, but she's been a real advocate, and she's getting settled right now from moving back. I mean, I guess she was doing some work out in California, or maybe visiting, and she's went back to Texas. So she will be joining us at some point in time, whether it be today or another day. I don't know, but she's interested in coming on when you're on as well.
Mm-hmm. What I want to add, sorry, but that's before I forget it, in response to your question about the differences between the Netherlands and the United States, another thing is our prison system is not a million-dollar industry. We don't earn all these billions of dollars. We don't earn from incarceration. That's another very huge difference.
I am so glad you brought that up, because that's been a major issue. There was a gentleman on the show with us last week. He is a real activist in the state of Missouri, but elsewhere as well. He was on the show the other day, and his name was Anthony Shahid. And he spoke about these large corporations. He said the best way to get to them and to wake them up is to go on and put all these negative reviews on this website, which is mainly, to me, it's an important issue, because that is one way to let them know prisons are not for profit. They should not be anyway. And to bring awareness of that in that area too.
Because what you see now is that people pay a lot of tax money, because incarceration is expensive for the communities. So they pay a lot of tax money for these prisons, but these corporations, they earn a lot. So in fact, the tax money is going through the pipeline of the system to the corporations. So you don't pay. So, you know, our tax money is also going to the prisons, but what we get back for paying our tax money is healed prisoners and more safety, because you see what I mean? So yes. If the prisons would not be for profit, then you also would have to pay a lot of tax money. But what you get back is that people are recovered, then they get released, and there is safety because there is less recidivism.
Exactly.
Now it's only that you in fact pay your tax money through the pipeline to the corporations, and they get your money. That's why they call it a pipeline. for one reason.
I wanted to say Van's name is Hanisch, Hanisch dash Godoy, but Hanisch, it sounds Dutch, right?
No, it's not Dutch.
Oh, it isn't. H-A-N-I-S.
No, it doesn't sound. H-A-N-I-S-H?
I-S-C-H.
I should see the name. Then maybe then I know. No, I cannot say it so quickly. Maybe she is. Mm-hmm.
You'll meet her on the show anyway. As I said, she's been active, really active, in trying to help put this Joan event together. So we'll see what happens with all of that.
Yeah, I think when you look at advocates and what you say that you would like to see families, you know, moving more, you know, doing more, I think that families should be become more aware of this, what we talked about, you know, that you can fight against the dehumanization of your own people. They have to become more aware of the fact that their tax money is going to corporations and it's going via the back of the prisoners, you know.
Exactly.
I think, yeah, they should become more. Sometimes I think people are too ignorant. They don't know exactly what's happening.
You know, as the young man said on the show yesterday, he mentioned that people are afraid to get involved because they don't know what to say. You know, they don't know how to say it or what to say. And that's one of the reasons why when we put these issues, when we did the listing of the issues that we're going to be addressing in June, we also put a script, a one-paragraph script, and that's all they have to do when they make their calls or do the letter writing or emailing, is just use that one script, which explains exactly why these things shouldn't happen. Under abolishing the death penalty, as I mentioned before, a government that kills someone because they kill someone is not doing the right thing. It doesn't even make sense. You know, two wrongs don't make a right. But also abolishing life and life without parole, this is something that, and I've realized this in all countries, and you mentioned it even in your country, you have life, but it's only for those terrorists, serial killers, you know, mass murders, the real extremists. And this is the way it is in most prisons, in all prisons really in other countries, unless it's severe, extreme, they don't have more than, and a lot of them even have less than 25 years max. But, you know, these are some of the issues that are being addressed in June, and also defunding the Department of Corrections around the country until and unless they start showing transparency and positive interaction between their staff and the incarcerated population. Mandatory work programs in education will prevent them from targeting others and depriving others of being able to participate in educational programs or work programs. Restoration of prisoners' rights to vote. This is a major thing around the country because prisoners feel that if they had their rights to vote, they could help us as well. But they should never have had their rights taken away because in Maine and Vermont, they never took away the rights of prisoners to vote. So there's a lot of issues, and mental health is a major issue. as you know, and also Donna Wynette from the Families, Friends, and Individuals for the Mentally Ill, and now she has joined forces with a Bridgewater group that's also fighting for justice for the Department of Corrections to get more involved as well. Department of Mental Health, I mean. But there's a lot of issues that need to be addressed in.
Yeah, there are a lot of issues, and I think that people should. What's a very important issue is the issue of responsibility. You know, that people have to understand that, you know, we talked about it, I think, before, but taking responsibility, that's something that prisoners have to learn again, many prisoners, because when they committed a crime, at that moment, they didn't feel any responsibility. Then they get in prison, they become incarcerated, and in prison, every responsibility is taken away again. After that, they are released, and how can they show responsibility in the community if they have never learned about it? But also, people should take responsibility for the fact that there is mass incarceration, and they should take the responsibility to change that. There is never a reason to dehumanize people. You cannot negotiate about human values, and that's what is happening. Mass incarceration means that, you know, there is a kind of negotiation about human values because it makes money, you know. So I think responsibility is a very important issue that should be brought up to the table. Take responsibility for your incarcerated people. They are your fellow citizens.
Yeah. Dorothy, did you have anything you wanted to ask or feedback you wanted to provide?
No, I was just listening to what the two of you were talking about.
Okay, Dorothy was also, as I was explaining to Mariam what happened yesterday on the show with the interference and everything that happened, it was a mess. And I called in
three times and they blocked me. The third time I called, I got through.
Well, the thing that we were talking about was the statement that was made regarding being afraid to be on the show because of the government perhaps being monitoring or whatever, and what led to that after that. And it was, as Marian explained, Marian, if you could just briefly explain that again to Dorothy and also the audience.
Well, you mean that piece, that part about advocates?
That the people coming out of prisoners with that lack of trust.
That we have to understand, especially maybe as advocates, that the people who have been in prison, they have experienced incarceration. They have experienced what it means to trust nobody and not be trusted. So they are, in a way, they are brainwashed, and they carry the prison system in themselves. And we, you and I and Dorothy, we never have been incarcerated. We do not know what it means to live in that system. So I think the people who have been incarcerated and are released, they have the knowledge about it, the true knowledge that we do not have, because they have the experience. And what I gave as an example, if somebody who has been in the prison system for a long time and he's released and he would not trust me or attack me, I will not blame him, but I would go conversate with him and ask him, can you explain to me what it means that you cannot trust me and all that? Tell me, share your knowledge about it. So I would have that conversation with him, because I can understand that he cannot trust me because he simply doesn't know anymore how to trust somebody. World has been against that person all these years in prison. He doesn't only feel it that way, it is so. Because for as long as somebody is in prison, that means that the country doesn't trust that person and has given up on him. And then he comes back. So, of course, he doesn't trust us. That's what I told you. And I think we should listen to these people because they know what it means. They have the knowledge, the experience. That's what I said, I believe.
You know, people have to have, I believe people have to have open minds, and they have to be able to accept a lot of things that they're hearing, whether it relates to them or not. And a lot of times people can't get offended so quickly because we're experiencing and working on fighting to all the injustices. When we talk about a lot of things, it doesn't necessarily mean it applies to a specific group or a specific person or organization. It applies to a lot of people. And that's something that if someone's going to be an advocate, they're going to be advocating for the incarcerated, they have to be understanding of these things. And advocates are going to have their issues periodically when it comes to fighting for justice. And that's what I'd like to let a lot of these advocates that haven't been around for a long time understand. And the mental issues that go on in the prisons, you mentioned solitary confinement. This is a major issue in the United States. In Massachusetts, they're supposed to be abolishing solitary confinement. Last year, they said it was in 2023. This year, I don't know if they're going to extend it to 2024 or sometime this year, they will be completely abolishing solitary confinement. But as you said, the psychological damages, recently it was put on Facebook. There was a man, he's been on death row, even though it's been, the death row is not occurring in that state. This man has been in solitary confinement for 23 hours a day all of these years. And I can't understand why no one has tried to make an effort, the media especially, to go into this prison and meet with this man. He cannot be sane after all these years.
No, exactly. We know, and maybe a lot of advocates have this, we know in theory, we know what is happening. We can read about it. We can research about it. I did my research for the book, but that doesn't mean that I know what it means to be incarcerated. So we have to listen to these people. They carry the system in themselves. You know, we can take them out of the system, but we cannot simply take the system out of them. So they will show behavior that we are not used to simply because we have not been in the system. So we have to understand that they are responding to us differently as what we are used to because they are damaged and they have to heal. So I will accept a lot more and different things from somebody who has been in the prison as a prisoner as somebody who has not, because he has this experience and it's devastating, but I don't know what the devastation is. I only can rationalize it, but I cannot feel it because I do not have the experience. So we have to answer with love and softness and also questions. But that's another thing. I think that not only with the prisoners, I think what I see in your country, also in my country, but also in your country, is we assume a lot of things. And we forget to ask if our assumptions are right. See, we react or respond too many times. We respond to our own assumptions, but we don't respond to the other people, to the other person.
Exactly.
So communication is important, you know, to look at. My next book is about responsibility. It's about justice, but also the underlying meaning of it. Not simply the easy one, but really the underlying meaning of it. Because communication, responsibility, justice, these are terms that are manipulated a lot, even in the Constitution. Are these words manipulated? And I want to understand and to research what is the real meaning of it and how do we use these words. And these words are also important as advocating. How do we communicate as advocates with the prisoners and with each other? And how do organizations work together or not? What is happening there?
Exactly. It's just... as you said too, in the United States, everybody assumes. That's the problem. We assume too much, and sometimes it can be offensive, and other times it can be harmful, you know, especially for the incarcerated who are behind those prison walls and all of these things taking place. It's terrible, but, you know, these things happen. We have a caller, 217. Do you want to state your name, please?
Yes, ma'am. My name is Joshua.
And Joshua, do you have anything you'd like to say or ask, any feedback you'd like to provide?
I would hope that we could all come together because this is probably going to be very terrible if we don't. And I really hope that people learn that message, the same message we've been taught for thousands of years before it's too late. Is that fair?
And what is that?
When we develop technology, when we separate ourselves, when we try to destroy each other, we often succeed.
I agree with you there. I
do not want to experience that, ma'am.
You know, that's the thing. They say man will destroy man, and that's exactly what's happening.
Yes, absolutely. And I'd prefer not to experience that in my lifetime.
We have Marian Jacobs on the show with us, and she is a psychosocial therapist, and also she's experienced with the prisons and everything. If you could talk more about what you're trying to get across, because I'd like to understand it as well.
Yes, ma'am. I'm happy to do so.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Just let me know when she's on.
Oh, she's on. She's on the show.
Yeah,
how you doing,
I am. Hello. Sorry, I was listening. I was trying to listen to what you were saying, because can you explain your view on the things that we are talking about?
Ma'am, can I first ask you where are you from?
Yes, of course. I am from the Netherlands. I still live in the Netherlands, and I work as a volunteer in a Dutch prison system, and I know people in the United States prison system. So that's why I am involved in this issue.
So you're asking me to try really, really hard not to mess with you. Okay.
And I don't know anything, so I always like to learn from people. So you teach me your view, how you... That's funny.
No, it's always a cycle. Are you guys familiar with, like, the fourth turning? Like, every 40 years, there's a major conflict, and we're kind of coming up on that. 2028, but everything is kind of going topsy-turvy now. Does that make any sense to anybody?
Yes, it
does. But do you mean that you expect in a few years again a, what do you say? What did you say, please?
People are going, well, we're already doing it.
Yeah, we are living in chaos now.
Yes, everything terrible that you're experiencing now, everything that you're seeing now, it's inevitably going to get worse.
Yeah, I think
this
too. But I think
we
are.
Yeah. I'm sorry, ma'am. I'm sorry.
No. I was interrupting you. I should be sorry. Sorry. Please.
How did they explain this? There was there's a turning, like a wheel. Imagine it as a wheel turning, and every 40 years, the wheel turns completely.
I'm sorry, Jason.
I'm sorry?
I have a call from Missouri. I have an incarcerated individual from Missouri, and he, Jason, can you stay on with us? I just want him to be able to, his time is limited, but I'd like to have you stay on because I'm really interested in what you have to say. because I'm in full agreement with some of the things you've already mentioned, and I'd like to hear more about it. But we have with us Reginald Clements from Missouri, and Reginald would like to say a few things. I believe, with the upcoming event. Thank you so much, Jason. Okay, Reginald, would you like to say what you were going to say?
Yes, thank you. My name is Reginald Clements. I'm a former death row inmate in the state of Missouri. I'm presently incarcerated at Jefferson City Correctional Center. I thank you for the opportunity to be on the show and to speak to the panel. It's something that I look forward to ever since I heard that I would have the opportunity to speak to you, because I know it was explained to me about Miriam Jacobs' book, Concentration Camps, and I've been wanting so bad to let somebody know about what's going on in the state of Missouri and how deeply entrenched the Confederate and Nazi authority is here. Because it's official on record. There's documentation to support it, where the KKK they adopted a highway in the state of Missouri and put up signs that no blacks was allowed to use their highway, and the St. Louis Police Force used to be ran by a group of Confederate colonels, and all the way up until 2010, and right now there's a racist attack from the Attorney General to remove a black circuit attorney who is fighting against the Ku Klux Klan, Kim Gardner out of St. Louis. And this kind of gives a backdrop to what I would really like to bring to light and to the forefront, because a lot of people don't realize mass incarceration is not by accident. It is by design. One of the things I want people to know is that and your title, Colonies Concentration Camps, is apt. That's exactly what they are. And right here in Missouri, in the heart of the United States, in the heartland, Potosi Correctional Center, where I was almost executed, is a Ku Klux Klan death camp. That area has the highest concentration of Ku Klux Klan activity in the United States of America. And they built a death camp there. The United States government allowed a death camp to be built in the Ku Klux Klan territory. And they used to burn crosses every time they executed a black man. I've seen the guards take their lighters and burn swastikas in the ceiling of the control bubble, and have swastikas on their computer screen as screensavers and Confederate flags. And they have racist Nazi tattoos. And so, yes, these prisons in the United States are actual concentration camps supported by, operated by individuals who have Nazi leanings and tendencies and belief systems, who support and read the mind camp from Adolf Hitler, and that's the ideology from which they operate. I've had guards tell me, don't look them in the face, look at their shoes. And I've had a guard summon me for a pad search. And it wasn't just me, this is something he did regularly. He is summoning you for a pad search with the Nazi salute, point at you with his hand up above your head. With a Nazi salute, and you got to go over there, because if you don't, they're going to put you in the hole.
Mm-hmm.
You end up in an ag-seg, lost in an ag-seg for who God knows how long, because the caseworkers are racist Klansmen, and it's a whole Klansmen regime. And mm-hmm. I was nearly executed in 2009. For a murder that I did not commit. And up to my day, they were extremely pissed off. You know, excuse my language, but that I did not get executed. And I thank you for the opportunity to get this word out. And it's something worth looking into. It's something that evidences and supports the title of the book, and it's something that's factually based. We're right here in the heartland of the United States of America at Potosi Correctional Center. You have a death, a Nazi Confederate death, Ku Klux Klan death camp in the heart of America. How this happened? It happened while people weren't paying attention. But that's
exactly
the same thing that the Jews did in Nazi Germany. At first they came for the Indians. Then they came for the Jews. And when they came for me, there was nobody to help me.
Reginald has been in, Reginald, how long have you been incarcerated now?
I've been incarcerated for 31 years.
And this has been on a wrongful conviction. And
as for the murder that the victims say I tried to prevent, the surviving victims say I argued with the person that did the murder and tried to stop the murder.
And the victim said that you tried to prevent the murder. Or you tried to prevent the incident, and you're still sitting in prison under a wrongful conviction.
Yeah. And they say 24, I've been locked up for 31 years, but they say 24 of those years don't count towards the time that I'm doing. They restarted my time because they were upset that I got off the death row. And my time doesn't start now until 2015, even though I've been locked up since 1991.
Mm-hmm. Now, Reggie, you said the victim said that that you try to stop it. Now, were there two victims?
There was three victims altogether.
Okay, and one of them died, and the other one said that you try to
stop. Two died, and the surviving victim, he said that he heard me and my co-defendant arguing on whether or not they would live or die. I was arguing with my co-defendant not to do anything to get on up out of here and not to kill these people.
Okay. But I think what I find important is because now we're talking about
the facility and may be monitored and recorded.
I'm sorry, Mariam, can you repeat that?
Yeah, what I was trying to say is we are not now talking about the crime, but I think it's important to advocate against the system despite the crime.
Right.
Whatever somebody has done or not done, there is never a reason to dehumanize. Never. Because that's already the pitfall. Then we are already going in the direction of the concentration camp. Because otherwise we are going to divide. If we say that, if you talk about the crimes, that means that we do think that some people do deserve this system. Nobody deserves the system. Nobody. I don't want to look at the crimes. I want to look at the system, and the system should be broken down. And another way of, because that's, you know, when you talk about the example of Norway, in Norway there are also people who have committed murder. Still, it's a humane system.
Exactly.
It's about the system. It's not about the crime.
It's real low.
Reginald, can you repeat that, Reginald?
I heard that Norway has the lowest recidivism rate, and it reduced their prison system reduced the crime rate with their method of rehabilitation from day one.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter what crime somebody has committed, because it's not about the crime; it's about the human being behind the crime or not the crime. So even, you know, if you would have been guilty of murder, then still you deserve restorative justice. You deserve rehabilitation. When we are going to divide people in bad people, good people, or whatever, then we already are part of this evil design. We shouldn't divide people. We should say every human being deserves rehabilitation. That's what they do in Norway for everybody. Also, even mass murderers or whatever. That's through rehabilitation. And then, you know, everybody gets this chance to rehabilitate. Everybody, no exceptions. Because exceptions make this evil system. That's a pitfall to think that way.
You know, the sad thing about it is, as Jason said, and he'll be speaking more on it, but you know what he was saying is things are going to get worse in the world. And that's why I want to hear more on that from Jason as well. But these are the issues that are going on right now in the penal system. And it's as Reginald said, in some states, it's worse than other states when it comes to the targeting of a certain culture or race or whatever. But there's so much going on in the system right now that needs to be addressed. And we're going to try to do things as far as bringing awareness, as far as, you know, doing this mass event, and hopefully others will be doing the same. And let's see what happens with that. But we have to look at all of this injustice that's going on right now, all of these people behind the walls suffering, and people stereotype. We have to look
exactly.
at the wrongfully convicted, as Reginald's talking about, the wrongfully convicted, and then you have first-time offenders who have never been in trouble before, made one mistake. Then you have victims who became offenders and because nothing was done. Justice was not served in their cases, so they're in prison. Prisoners should not be stereotyped. Each of them should be separately.
I think the thing is the system should not exist.
Yeah.
Somebody was talking,
Reginald?
Sorry.
If I may interject, when it comes to the system in the United States, one of the things that has made it so inhumane is the 13th Amendment, where
they
turned prison into slavery.
Yeah.
And all these corporations and all these investment banks and anybody that makes money off of the prison system is supporting slavery.
Yeah, that's a
Miriam, you have mentioned the 13th Amendment numerous times, haven't you?
Yeah, it's the exception.
Yeah, we should probably ratify that immediately. The 13th Amendment says that there is no such thing as slavery unless a man is in servitude, and a man is in servitude when he's a prisoner. We should probably ratify that.
I need a clarification on that too. I'm not literate when it comes to those kind of amendments. But Jason, can you repeat that?
I'm sorry, are we quiet?
Can you repeat that, Jason?
Oh no, my name is Joshua.
I'm sorry, Joshua.
Oh man, okay, Brandon. No, I'm just messing with
you. You know, I should have known it was Joshua because he's talking prophetic now, and that's why I wanted to hear more. But anyway, I'm sorry, Joshua. Can you repeat that?
No, the 13th Amendment is terrible. It should break everybody's hearts. The 13th Amendment says that there is no such thing as slavery in America, but men that are in servitude can be treated as slaves.
And a lot of it, that's why they call it modern day slavery?
I am never in my life going to try to understand why people do the things that they do, ma'am. No. Nope, that's not on me. Yeah. People will always be crazy. So, you know, that's
right now.
That's a very
prison that I'm at, and this is happening in prisons all across America. If I don't work, I'm forced to be locked down 23 hours a day.
Yeah.
The only way I'm not locked down 23 hours a day is if I have a job working for the prison.
Yeah.
And then they call it voluntary. So if I don't volunteer to work, I get locked down under Ag-Sag confinement, which is basically a hole. I get locked down for 23 hours a day.
Are you afforded opportunity for to take higher educational correspondence or regular programs?
I've been constantly trying to find a way to get computer technology education, because in the past 31 years, I haven't had access to a computer programming or anything at all.
Now, do they have computers in the library, though, right?
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
They have computers at the prison, but you can only get computer training if you have an outdate, if you're going to get out within the next 5 years.
Wow, that's the only time?
Yes.
Part of the game, part of the design.
You have 1 minute
wow.
left.
Wow. Jeez. Yeah, that's part of the design, the way the system is designed to dehumanize. It's all part of it.
Yeah.
Part of the game. Yeah. You know, in the concentration camps, they were producing dead bodies, and in the prison system, they're producing working robots for the corporations.
Mm.
Well, it's quite similar, isn't it? It sounds harsh, but I'm sorry. I am that bitter about it.
Yeah.
And everybody should be. It hurts my heart sometimes. It makes me cry when I think about how much it seems like people don't care. Because I hope that people would care more. But and I hope that it's because people don't know how bad it is. That's what I'm hoping. It's just because people don't really know how bad it is or how bad it's gotten.
Thank you for using Securus. Goodbye.
Okay. Joshua, I wanted to ask you to please finish what you were saying, because what you were saying is, you know, they say that we should know the signs of the time, and we should also know
no,
that...
No, my man, I apologize. My man just, and man, oh, that total disregard for the way that we do things here compared to the Nordic system. Are you guys willing to address that, or should I just shut my mouth right now?
Please go ahead.
The way that the Nordics do it, the Scandinavians, the way that they do it is that they literally place somebody who did something terrible on an Amish farm. And their family come – yes, manual labor every day.
Now, Amish, was founded out of Pennsylvania, right?
No, that's an old school thing. It's a rejection of technology.
Oh, okay.
It's an old Puritan Christian thing.
Oh, okay. So I'm going to let you finish talking, because I'm confused at this time.
Oh, I'm sorry. No. I apologize. I'm not trying to be confusing. The way that the Scandinavians, the Nordics, the Northern Europeans handle people that can be possibly sent back into society, people that can be rehabilitated, is they send them to work. And they don't send them to work in slavery. They send them to work with families. They teach them skills, and they teach them to love other people. And we don't do that in America.
And you said that was the Amish?
No, I'm saying Amish work mentality. You're going to work like 18 hours a day.
Oh, okay. They don't
yes,
do it enough.
You're gonna wake up the next day and feel bad about the
Jeez.
But I
Yeah,
thinking,
I know.
But I think, and I think I talked about that last week too, is when you look at the Scandinavian prison system or here at Northern Europe, I think it's never possible to implement exactly the same system in the United States. I think there should be a way of looking what is the best prison system in the United States? Because the United States is another country with another past, with another culture. Everything is different. So elements should be implemented.
Do you know why we can't apply that here?
Yeah, I mean, your whole system is different. I mean, you are a neoliberal country. Everything
no.
Is based on money. And, for instance...
It's not money. It's a cultural thing. Do you know why we cannot apply the Scandinavian hard criminal possible rehabilitation to Americans?
Why?
Because we have... what is the average Scandinavian population? Like 5 million people? Maybe 6? In America, we have 330, maybe 340. People we have a higher population in 3 of our cities plus the metropolitan area than all of the Scandinavian countries, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not being rude about that.
Geography is also completely different because you also have these 50 complete different states.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
That's a little bit the same as that Europe has all these countries which are different.
Yes, exactly. So driving through America.
Yeah.
Yes, driving through America and following all the laws as you go through is no different than driving from Scandinavia down to Italy. It's all different laws. It's all different rules.
Exactly.
But in the overall, I think you have neoliberalism. You have this completely different history. You know, you have the systemic racism, which is different.
What is that?
And we have more socialism here, and also in Scandinavia. For instance, in Norway, Norway, and maybe also Sweden, education is free for everybody.
You're in Scandinavia right now?
No, I live in the Netherlands.
Oh, okay, so you're just south of that. Okay, no, ma'am.
Oh, yeah.
systemic racism. No, that's not a thing here.
It actually is. It's got,
in America.
You know, yes, it's getting more prevalent in the United States of America. I mean, we're hearing about it every day now. For a long time, it was not so consistent, but now it's becoming more and more consistent with the things that are
other countries are seeing it and
reading about it. And what, you know, people don't understand that other countries are watching everything that goes on in the United States, and a lot of them
America sets the tone in the Western world. Yes, ma'am, I understand that. The only thing systemically racist now is black only dorms, black only graduations, and what's the other thing?
Well, they don't actually have black only, but what they do have is right now there is racism going on between the Jews are being oppressed, blacks are being oppressed.
Attacked by black. Who is attacking the Jews?
The Jews have been under a lot of attack recently. I was watching CNN.
I know. Who is attacking the Jews in America?
I don't know, but wait a minute. Hold on a second. We have Reginald back with us. I'm sorry,
yeah.
Reginald. Can you say that again?
Yes, ma'am.
The neo-Nazi and Ku Klux Klan organization, hate crimes have been on the rise in the United States for the past 5 years. And those are statistics that have been put out by FBI as well as the U.S. Justice Department about the increase of hate crime against Jews and against people of religious beliefs, against people based on their racism. Just 2 days ago, here in Missouri, Kansas City, Missouri, a young boy was knocking on him.
It was all over the news.
I know you're talking about the guy, the young 16-year-old in Kansas City.
Shot him in the head.
Was it Kansas City?
It was a little black boy.
Yes, it was Kansas City.
He shot him in the head just because he knocked on his door.
Yeah, it's been all over the news. It still is.
That's not what happened.
And like I was saying earlier, I wasn't talking about my personal case. I was talking about my personal experience within a racist system. agenda when it comes to the United States prison system and justice system and trying to overthrow the government in the United States subversively. The subversive efforts and the indirect language that they're using is they're using it to try to dilute the argument and say that there's no racism while they're hanging black people.
You know, the thing is, right now, as you mentioned earlier,
the
Reginald, Indians, the Native Indians, the blacks, the Jews, Robert Kraft, the owner of the NFL or the Patriots, he was just on this morning. He is establishing or forming something to fight against the racism with the injustice with the Jews. The thing is, we're in the United States of America, and this is representatives of every country actually what makes up the United States of America. So it shouldn't be just race fighting for their race. It should be all races of all people of different cultures or races that are going through this oppression. They need to come together and fight this, because what's happening
it's
now...
reclaiming our humanity.
The United States, that's why a lot of countries respect the United States, is because it consists of representatives from every country, including their own. And we should be proud to be in the United States, and now it's becoming a farce. It's becoming a joke to everyone.
Can I toss some fuel on this flame?
Well, Josh was saying that blacks only in certain schools and, I guess, universities and things like that.
I was saying.
What was it you were saying, Josh?
Black-only graduations in universities and black-only dorms. We're bringing back segregation, and we shouldn't be doing that.
This is it. I don't understand it. But I want to say, really, we're getting off track.
Well, he's presenting a reverse racist argument.
It's not reverse racism, my friend. It's just racism. We should not be segregating ourselves for any reason.
Exactly.
Well, I believe that everybody should have a fair share, a fair opportunity, and gain access to what they earn a right to. There should be inequality. There should be fair wages for fair work. Women should be paid just as much as men for doing the same work.
That's not even in the conversation. I'm saying that people of a specific skin color should not be able to live differently in a different area with people of the same skin color just because they have the same skin color. We are in America right now. If you want to play this game, I'm sure there are like 180 countries all over the planet that you can go to. Don't do that here, but they're doing it here.
I'm confused, because on one hand you're saying that we shouldn't be racist, and then you're saying don't pay attention to racism.
No, I'm saying don't be racist at all.
Right, I agree that we should not be racist, but there are racist people in this world, and we need to check that. And keep that in check, because if we let racist people ramp it and do whatever they want to,
you know,
maybe it's interesting to wonder who profits from racism.
The Democrats.
And you know, the thing is, the way I look at it, racism is existing. That's a big problem. But right now, the show is on the injustices in the prisons. And I'd like to keep it that way, because too often we have conversations that turn into totally different subjects than what we initially began with. Marion Jacobs is from the Netherlands. She's from across the pond, coming on the show to talk about her book and the injustices in the penal system, and all of these things included in this book. But what happens is we get off track, and that's why I always tell people, if they want to come on the show separately at a different time, we can talk about different issues. But it seems like lately it's been consistent with us getting off track of the issues of injustices in the penal system and getting off track completely. I have been trying to save my show, because I went through this with the Native Indians. Now I'm going through this with Reggie. I'm going through this with you. And you know that we are trying to get this thing going for June. So let's try to stay on track, and we'll have a separate show. If you want, we can have a separate show. I'm always willing to schedule another show. But I didn't invite Mariam Jacobs on the show for this because this woman is a very busy woman. She's got all kinds of things going, and she's been taking time out to come on our show. So I'd like to go back to what she was talking about, and that is what goes on in the prisons. The solitary confinement, the injustices, and Reginald, you hit on some of it with the prisons for profit, the work programs. These are all issues that we were discussing. But as far as the racism goes, right now that's all that's been going on all week long, and we need to get off of it so we can get back on track with what we want to try to do to make some justice prevail.
I was trying to talk about the fourth turning.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
May I share something, Leona?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think when it comes to the way that prisoners are treated, there's a massive staff shortage in the American prison system.
Mm-hmm. Law enforcement, too.
Right now, it's like they are at 30% capacity when it comes to the staff that's needed. And it places our lives in danger.
Yeah.
And we are not getting the medical care or the food that we're supposed to be getting. And it's ultimately everybody else, regardless of race, we're up in here suffering. And it's getting worse because they don't want to change the way the system is structured. And it's not structured properly because it was structured for profit watchers.
Yeah.
And the last thing I'd like to share is in the humanity aspect. I've seen a guard named Shannon Clubs starve a prisoner to death named James McKinney. And he wrote down that the man went on a hunger strike, but he starved him to death. It was intentional, and nothing happened to him.
You know what's so sad is this is a human rights issue that needs – where are these human rights organizations? And where's American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU? Where are Amnesty International? We have a human rights violations in our own country, and they're going talking to other countries about their problems when we have people here in this country. Look at, what's her name? She's a surgeon, Dr. Adriana Carrillo, cutting off the wrong foot, leaving metals and stuff in the bodies of these people she did surgery on. There's over 1,000 lawsuits filed against her. WellPath.
Really?
WellPath is in 36 states. They are the contracted providers for prisoners. WellPath has over 1,000 lawsuits filed against them. The founder of WellPath has been in court on charges of bribery and corruption. These are contracted providers in the prisons. So we have to look at all of these contracted providers in the prisons. We have to look at where is the human rights organizations that can't go in. We have to look at our legislative members who need to start going into the prisons. They're fighting for criminal justice reform when they don't have a clue what's going on because they're not going in to visit enough. We have a few here in Massachusetts, and there's a few in other states, but more legislative members have to get involved. They need to go into the prisons. The media reporting one-sided stories. They never meet with the incarcerated. They never try to find both sides to a story. But they're up here reporting one-sided stories. That's why the communities are so fearful of crime, because they're hearing one-sided. We have to look at the epidemic, and Marion can confirm this, of psychological mental illnesses and addictions in this country. And they're throwing everybody in prison instead of long-term residential treatment facilities. We have a problem in America.
I was just going to say the easy answer to that is that the tax dollars we pay to take care of prisoners don't go to Americans.
You have a good idea. I say defund the prisons and defund the law enforcement until we see positive interaction, until we hear of some successes. No one is transparent anymore, and there's no oversight in any of these places. There has to be oversight. And Department of Mental Health, if they're not going to put these people and long-term residential treatment facilities, Department of Mental Health needs to start going into the prisons, as the American Psychological Association needs to start going into the prisons. They're doing a lot of talking, but they're not.
I apologize. I was just going to say I can agree with that. If you agree with the statement, if you want peace, be peaceful. If you want something else, you can get that too.
But there's a lot of people that are trying to be peaceful, and there's a lot of people that are taking away that peace. Unfortunately, the prisons are full of victims who became prisoners. And that's what happens. A lot of people, vulnerable, innocent, or sometimes just mentally ill or whatever the case may be, they end up in prison.
No, I'm sorry. I'm from Chicago. They literally have buildings sanctioned for the secret police in my city where they can pull up anybody and just take them to a basement of a building and interrogate them for hours. Nobody has rights, you know? And
wow.
In my mind, I'm like, welcome to Chicago, you know? But it's the same thing in New York City. It's the same thing in L.A., you know?
But you know, Chicago, you mentioned Chicago, and that's the one I hear of all the time on the television. Chicago is pretty bad in a lot of areas.
Island.
Yeah.
And,
yes.
I'm glad Marion Jacobs is bringing this stuff to light because we need to
have 1 minute left
from the lens of other people looking in, because we got used to being abused and seeing abuse. We've got desensitized. And I'm glad that Marion Jacobs is bringing fresh view.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Thank you, ma'am.
Mariam, I really appreciate you coming on. And Reggie, I know you have just a short time, and we only have about 7 minutes. And Joshua, I still want to hear more from you on what you were talking about when you first came on. So we have about 7 minutes. So I'd like to have you talk on what you initially stated, because things are getting worse, and I just want to get your theory on all of this, because I see the same thing happening in the world, not just this country.
Thank you for using Shakira. Goodbye.
Okay, good man. No, it's always a cycle. Nothing that we're going to experience today, I don't care where you are in the world, is going to be the first time somebody's experienced it. This is the cycle, but it happens so often that they were actually able to track it. So it was the Revolutionary War, and then the Civil War, and then World War II, and then we had the end of the Cold War. Like, it's all repetitive. We keep doing this.
Yeah. Jeez, hold on a second.
Does that make okay?
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. Finish up what you were saying.
No, this is just a repetitive cycle. It's something you can actually track. It's kind of old. It was discovered in the 1800s. But,
you said
yes,
it happens. You said it happens every how many years?
It's not exactly, it's 40 to 60, but we've already, so the Revolutionary War was in 1776 to the early 1780s, and then, well, crap, it might be 80 years, I think it's 80 years. then we had our...
A new empire, that's the time of... Empire exists from 80 to 100 years. That comes up in me. I read it yesterday. And now it's the end of 80 years empire, United States empire. We get a new world order. That's what we are standing for now. We are standing in front of a new world order.
No, it's going to... The next turning is supposed to happen in 2028. That's the next turning. I don't know. if I were a mathematician, if I understood the stuff I was talking about, guys, that would be way more impressive.
Do we any of us know? We don't really know what the fate is.
I know. What bewildered fools are we? Humans, breathing air, living life. Yeah, I know. Everything, I know. We act very smart all the time, don't we?
But I know there's a lot of things that I feel that are going to happen this year. Because, you know, I'm not a religious person, a very religious person, but I will follow what is being mentioned in Revelations and what's happening in this country and around the world now, because it says it's going to be worse than Sodom and Gomorrah. So we look at all these countries coming together, we look at all the nuclear weapons out there and all the conflict that's going on around the world. It's almost telling us.
Is Reggie on the phone or not?
Yeah, he just came back on again.
Can is it possible that I sent my English version of the book to him?
Yes, go ahead. Reginald, she wants to explain something to you?
No, I want to ask something.
Oh, she wants to ask. Okay, I'm sorry.
Is he on? Is he still
yes,
there?
He's on.
Can you hear me, Reginald? Can you hear me? Hello?
Wait a minute. Let me turn this up.
Okay. I don't know if it's possible. Would you like to read my book that I send it to you? But is it possible?
Yes, it's very possible. I was wondering, is it available on Amazon?
No, but I can let my publisher send a book directly to you, because then it's sealed.
Okay,
that the
yes,
person.
Please.
What's your registration number? Your DC number?
My prison number is 990102.
Wait. 990 and then 10 and then
990102 and the two nines stand for capital punishment.
990102.
And your last name, your name is Reginald, R-E-G-I-N-A-L-D?
Yes.
Last name?
E-L-E-M-O-N-S.
Again, please. Can you also hear with Leona?
Yeah.
Can you repeat it?
C-L-E-M-O-N-S.
I'm writing it down, Miriam. I'll get the address to you. I will get it to you.
Okay, C-L-E-M-O and then
N-S. C-L-E-M is Mary, O-N is in Nancy, S.
Clemens. Okay, and the correctional institution is? The name?
Jefferson City Correctional Center. Jefferson City Correctional Center.
Yeah. What was the place? The city, the place?
Missouri.
Oh yeah, Missouri.
The state of Missouri.
Yeah, I can find it. I will try to. I will contact my publisher and see if he can send it directly, then it's sealed, because that's what the prison of course wants. We can try it.
Yes, as long as it has an invoice, I should get it.
What? Can you repeat that, please?
An invoice. When a book goes in and has an invoice from a publisher or from a retail or whatever, it has some kind of a invoice.
Okay, but you know, Leona, you know that about that. You can explain that to me. Okay.
I'll explain it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I will try to do my best.
Thank you very much. Thank you all
thank
for
you
allowing
too.
Me to create the show. Thank you, Leona.
Yeah, thank you too.
I appreciate it.
Take care of yourself, my friend.
Okay, and again, Reginald, we can set up a time when you want, if you want to come on the show, we can do a show with you on it. You can talk about your issues and everything.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
I would love that.
Okay, great.
Okay. We can learn a lot from you.
And Joshua,
take good care of yourself, my friend.
Did you hear that? Okay, Joshua, I'd love to have you come back on again because I want to hear more about what you started to talk about. You know, this is an issue that we all have to look at, and this is why it's so important for us to try to come together in unity, to try to work out all these problems that are going on in the penal system, in the communities elsewhere. We're looking at the global warming. We have a serious global issue, warming issue, and we have serious issues in the penal system, and we have serious issues right now with all these countries coming together, preparing for the worst. Joshua, you mentioned it's going to get worse, and I see it going all around us in the world.
It has to get worse. I don't think people appreciate what they had. I don't think people appreciate what they had. No, it's going to get a lot worse. Have you ever met a slave before?
And this is what happens. We take things for granted, and then when it gets really, really bad, everybody's scrammaging to come together, you know, out of fear and everything. We should be able to come together without having a crisis situation. We should be able to come together in unity.
Yes, absolutely. I should be able to go to Africa and Asia and not get shot for trying to free slaves. Because
and the thing is,
slavery is obviously terrible.
You know, the thing is, people go all over to the Caribbean. They go all over these places for vacations. And yet we have all these cultures right here in our own country. And we can't even get along in that aspect of it.
Yes, we do. We get along very well. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. But anyway.
We get along very well. Are you kidding? Oh, my God. I have a Jewish synagogue up the street. I have a Muslim mosque down the other street. I have a Catholic church right up the street. I have a Presbyterian. I have all these churches all over the place. I have all these places of worship. You know what we don't agree on? The prices at the grocery store.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's about it. You know, welcome to America.
Well, and in the Netherlands, we also have these discussions in the shop. So I think that's universal.
Mariam, okay. I want to thank you for coming on. And Josh, I want to thank you. I haven't heard everything that I wanted to hear from you, Josh. Mariam, and I'm really sorry that things got so far off track today, but as always...
No, that's okay. That's okay. That's human. Yeah. I like it. I like human conversations, you know, so this is human.
Well, hopefully the next time we'll be more focused on certain things. But again, thank you for being on with us, Mariam. And Joshua, thank you for coming on, and I hope you'll come on again with us. And we are going to be ending this episode right now because we are running out of time. So thank you all for listening in. Mariam, thank you again for coming on. I know that you're a busy woman these days, but I appreciate every moment you can give us. You have so much to offer. And
thank you for having me.
Thank you. Again, Joshua, thank you as well. We are now going to end this episode, everyone. Have a blessed day. Bye-bye.